Hello, Internet. It's Tori. You're listening to the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. For updates on when episodes go live, follow us on Twitter and Facebook. To join the discussion, visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/CosmereCast, where you'll find an invitation to our Discord server. Thank you for listening, and please, enjoy the show.
Hello, and welcome to the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. I'm your host, confused by the thing Dave just said. Joining me this week are Craig.
Hello, I am also confused.
Dave.
What?
And Tori.
Hello, Internet.
And we start every week with good things, so Craig, good.
Wow, that was impressive, Tori. That was the most different I've heard your introduction yet.
I thought it was in keeping with the theme.
It's true. So I've been playing a new game recently in my very limited time that I have to play. It's called Graveyard Keeper. You're a keeper of graveyard. It's pretty cool.
It's called Async Multiworld.
So I actually got this from, I think Fruitbats was playing it. And if you guys have never seen him, he's a Twitch streamer. He keeps to mostly a consistent schedule, but he plays neat games that have, I don't know. I tend to find the choice of his games have a neat premise behind it. So this happens to be one of them.
Plays a lot of 4X games.
This
like
is a
Rimworld, I guess. Stuff like that.
This is a crafting RPG type game, sort of in the vein of, let's say, Stardew Valley or Harvest Moon, for those of you not familiar with Stardew Valley, except you're a graveyard keeper instead of a farmer. So you dig graves, you get bodies sent to you from who knows where to place in these graves, and you make your graveyard look nice. You also happen to be a cleric, and you have sermons, and there's a lot to do. You meet the townspeople, they have tasks that give you. And the neat thing about this game is that there's a lot of different things, different ways to approach the game. It's not just, you know, like I said, digging graves, popping bodies in them. But you can focus on different aspects. Like, there's a lot of different, I guess the game calls it technologies, but different skills that you can pick up. And it's really neat how they let you sort of develop your character over time to have different skills and be able to do different things. And like I said, talk to the NPCs to get different tasks, keep you going to whatever it is that you want to do, what you think you're trying to achieve. There is an overall story as well, which you'll get from the very beginning. So if that's your thing, you can follow the story or you can just go do your own thing and have fun. But it's surprisingly addictive because of there's always something for you to do. And the game approach, the approach is such that lots of little tasks that you can accomplish in a short period of time that just happen to build up to making a lot of progress as you play. So it's nice that you don't have to be like, oh, I have to reach this goal, which will take 8 hours. You don't think about that. You just like, do the little tasks and get stuff done. Pretty fun. I like it.
All right. Dave, good.
My good game this week just came out this weekend. It is Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity.
What?
Pretty fun.
Oh, I want to play that too. I ordered it and it got delayed and I'm waiting for my copy.
Oh no. I got it on release day shipped to me. So yeah, it's if you've ever played any Dynasty Warriors games, there's just large scale battles where you take the place of a hero that just slaughters hundreds and hundreds of foes. You have some like have to take over tactical waypoints and fortresses and things. And the story is the prequel of Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. So if you haven't played Breath of the Wild, this game presumably will contain spoilers for the first 10 minutes of that game. But it's pretty fun. I so far really enjoy the gameplay of the original Hyrule Warriors, or rather Hyrule Warriors Definitive Edition is the version of that original game that I played. I like that so far better in gameplay and in like comfort of the controls. But as I'm learning to pick up the character's skill sets, like there are a number of things that set it apart from Hyrule Warriors. Like rather than items, you have like the Sheikah Slate and like the Magnesis and stuff for countering enemies, and like different enemies, like you might have the same enemy that if it does a certain move or is holding a certain weapon, you need to use Magnesis or Stasis or whatever. So like there's some cool features. It seems to be a little lenient on like health recovery stuff. So if you found yourself dying a lot in Hyrule Warriors so far, Calamity seems like it's going to be a little easier. It gives you like it gives you no limit on like the amount of healing you can do. And Mipha actually can heal with her special attack as well. So, which by the way, Mipha is my favorite character so far. I finished the first two chapters. So I've got Link, Zelda, Impa, and the four robot masters. The four divine beast pilots.
So wait, which one's Mitas?
Nobody's Mitas.
I thought that was a cat. I'm confused. Okay, keep going.
You mean Mipha?
I don't know which name you said because you said it.
Mipha, the fish wife.
Oh, okay, cool.
Your fish husband's dead sister. Let's be more accurate about this. Fish husband's dead sister.
Who's fish husband?
Prince Sidon.
Yeah, he's definitely the husband.
Yeah, I guess. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess some people. Yeah, but yeah. In Age of Calamity, she's alive, and Prince Sidon's a little kid, and he's freaking adorable.
Yeah, he don't lose that.
So how does this compare against the other Hyrule Warriors that came out on Switch?
I mean, it has more of an actual story, and like, if you're attached to the characters and the world of Breath of the Wild, then you should definitely get enjoyment just from, you know, being immersed in that in Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity. Gameplay-wise, it's pretty similar to really any Dynasty Warriors game. They all kind of follow the same formula. Like, you've got like a basic attack, a strong attack, different combos for different characters, then like a special attack. But yeah, in this one, you can be Mipha and throw little fountains down and warp to the fountains and attack people from behind. It's awesome. Oh, you also, all right, so this, you probably would expect this, so maybe slight-ish spoiler, but this is chapter two again. You also get to do levels where you're piloting Divine Beast, which is freaking awesome.
Oh, that sounds freaking awesome.
Yeah.
My FedEx tracking information says that my copy is in a truck and on the way to my house right now. So if I disappear in the middle of the podcast, you're going to know what happened.
Ooh. Guess we got to get through it fast.
So have you been able to pilot the fifth Divine Beast yet?
I don't remember a fifth Divine Beast.
It's in the DLC. It's the motorcycle.
No.
What?
I don't have the DLC of Breath of the Wild, but I won't say because I don't want to. I will say there are Divine Beast piloting levels. I'm not going to go further into that.
Okay. Kind of accidentally, my good thing this week is Breath of the Wild. Yeah, I've been watching like some challenge playthroughs of it, primarily by a streamer called Small Ant, who mm-hmm. actually does a lot of YouTube content as well. And those were really fun to watch, and it got me in the mood to play Breath of the Wild again, which just involved digging out my Wii U and getting that set up again. So I've actually been wanting to do this for like 3 months, and then haven't, because Wii U and not Switch. And yeah, in order to play it on a Switch, I'd have to buy it for the Switch. I don't feel like spending $60 on a game I already own. But I don't need to tell you guys about Breath of the Wild, because everybody knows. It's a great game. You're breathing wildly.
And it's funny that you mentioned Small Ant, because I've also been watching a lot of his challenge replay. I don't know why. He has an entertaining way about his videos, and it does make Breath of the Wild look a lot.
Yeah, I don't.
I mean, it is a lot of fun. But
I've tried watching a few of his like actual Twitch live streams, and they're not great.
Mm.
But like the YouTube content is amazing. Like his editing is great.
Right.
So, Tori, good.
I went this week and I got fitted for new running shoes, and that's my good thing. I've told you guys before that I used to do running, like I used to do 5Ks, and back then I did barefoot running, like I wanted to feel the ground under my feet. Like,
ooh,
barefoot running is not, you're not literally barefoot, your shoes have nothing on the sole, so there's no support or anything, it's just the rubber under your foot, that's it.
So like the
Like Kelsier.
Sure. But anyway, back when I was seriously running and wearing those barefoot style shoes, I was younger and fitter, and now my feet hurt all the time, all the time. So I went to a running store and they measured my feet and they had me walk on a digital pad that also measured how I walked on my feet. And then they told me, this is where all the pressure is. So these are the kind of shoes you need. And they fitted me for new shoes. And now my feet don't hurt all the time.
Nice.
The shoes I got, and I'm not necessarily advocating for this specific brand, because, you know, if you have problems with your feet, you should go and get fitted for your own shoes. But I ended up with a pair of Hokas, which I had heard good things about from other people before. But yeah, now my feet feel so much better. So getting the measurements done was free at the store I went to. A lot of running stores do that for free. They just expect you to buy their expensive shoes. So give it a try if your feet hurt.
Yeah, a good pair of shoes goes a long way.
All right, Dave, I believe it's your turn to talk about, I don't know, some book or something.
My good chapters this week is the beginning of part two of Words of Radiance by Brandon Sanderson. Part two is titled Wind's Approach, and our viewpoint preview says we will have Shallan, Kaladin, Adolin, and Sadeus, Adolin, Adolin. I can't remember how to pronounce anybody's name.
Dave, you're being worse than me.
Except for Numuhuku Makiaki Aya Lunamore.
That's true. You got that right.
All
right,
chapter 13, The Day's Masterpiece. Bluth insults Shallan's stick. Pattern's name is many numbers. Shallan loses her memories. Oh no, no one's going to profit from the apocalypse. So Shallan, if you'll recall, is in this caravan. She talked Tvalkov into taking her back to the Shattered Plains. And there's
a
guy named...
But they weren't just there.
I know, but she's important, so they should do what she says. And maybe not extort the royal family for money, or maybe. We'll see. She might be important. She's a light eyes. So Bluth is this guy, and...
He's just this guy, you know?
She's trying to spark up a conversation with him. She's like, you know, it's customary for blah, blah, blah. And he's like, if I understood all them big words, and anyway... And she's like, well, you use words that I don't understand. They're probably cuss words. And he's like, you think I'm as dumb as that stick? And Shallan's like, what did you say about my stick? And then we learned Pattern's real, it does have a real name, but it's many numbers. Probably irrational, if I were to guess. An irrational number. Could be E, could be pi, could be square root of 2. It might not even be a real number. Oh, what if Pattern is a complex number and like the real part is in the material realm and the imaginary part is in the cognitive realm? Whoa.
That's
answer the question. What if? What if that?
That would be pretty cool.
Yeah. Alright. Good answer. I don't have to RAFO.
Sure.
Alright. And Shallan is starting to lament the fact that she lost all of her pictures that she drew, all her picture madrons, and she's almost kind of more sad about that than, like, Gasna, quote, dying. So, I don't know. She feels bad about that, but...
I mean, the pictures come from her, you know.
She does still have
attachment.
She does still have the drawing that she made of Gasna, though.
Gasna's just some lady.
And no one's going to profit from the apocalypse. I forget why that was something. This is like the last note.
Wasn't that her argument?
No, I don't know. I don't remember what happened in this chapter. That was like four chapters ago.
Okay.
I mean, not profiting from an apocalypse. She's clearly never played a Final Fantasy because all the shopkeepers profit from the apocalypse in those games.
With the same four customers.
What is with them rising their prices as you get closer to the end boss? I don't understand.
Well, I mean, how much does a cheeseburger cost in California compared to Philly? I don't know.
So you're saying the final boss is in California?
Yeah. Well, yeah, yes. Because it's not it's not based on time. It's based on region.
In FF10, this actually gets brought up with Owaka, the traveling merchant guy. And he's basically sort of betting on you to win, because if you don't, then him having money will be meaningless. But if you do, and he then has all of your money after you win, then he wins.
Okay. That's pretty funny.
It's like he believes in the heroes. Good for him.
I mean, not enough to, like, give them better weapons that they could use to help win, but, you know.
They can afford it.
You know what he could do is he could give it to them for free, but then they just owe him the money after they win.
Look, see, guys, they're carrying around, like, 99 elixirs and never using them. They can clearly have enough money to buy whatever he sells.
That's true. I was going to say this just demonstrates that Beetle from the Zelda games is the superior vendor because he gives you a discount by that time. Like, after you've spent enough money on his stuff, you get a discount for the rest of the game.
And you have a 5,000 rupee wallet? Or if we're talking Wind Waker, I don't know if you're talking Wind Waker or Breath of the Wild.
I think he gives you the discount in every game that he's in.
The funny thing is, like, well, in Breath of the Wild, money becomes meaningless by that point in the game anyway. It's like, well, I've got 50 sapphires, so I'll just sell these.
True.
All right. Chapter 13 is no more. Chapter 14, Iron Stance. This guy's crazy. He's talking to a sword. This guy's crazy. He ate chicken for breakfast. This is fencing, not the WWE. Adeline technically didn't cheat and wins. Salinor unpairs his Bluetooth sword. Renarin gets the blade. That was wise. Now people will underestimate you. Yeah, that was my plan all along, Aunt Navani. Chapter 14. Adeline finally gets to duel, and there are stakes. This is for a shard. Adeline has to put his shard there.
Are they medium rare stakes?
Adeline has to put up his blade and plate against Salinor's blade, and they go in, they start the fight, and Adeline just immediately starts wailing on Salinor and beats the crap up out of him. Like, not even in, like, a stylish, duelish way. Like, he's just like, poof, bam, and then gets him down, and he starts stomping his foot on his plate.
It's bacon a beat
down. Boom, and he's like, yeah, I thought we were gonna have a sword fight. And then Adeline's like, welcome to the real world. Boom! And then the referee, she's like, well, there's no rule that says shard bearers can't play basketball. And so technically he can do this.
I just need you to narrate every fight scene in the Cosmere in this style forever, please.
Okay.
All right, so what actually happened there is that before the fight, Adeline was actually drinking a White Claw, and as we all know, there ain't no laws when you're drinking claws, and that's Santa what Claus. Happened.
What happened was this guy's a wuss and doesn't have any actual skill. Like, the opinion, since Adeline hasn't been in any real challenging duels for a while, they've underestimated him, and he doesn't come out with the skill that he really, if he had drawn this out into, like, a quote proper duel, he still would have won, but he just wanted to get to the point, possibly just because he was angry. He's like, I've been waiting to beat someone up for a long time. And then at the end, Salinor unpairs his Bluetooth sword, and Adeline gives it to Renarin.
Bluetooth?
Yeah, yeah, to unpair it.
So Dave, you know how that part in Paper Mario Thousand Year Door where you're at the boxing match, and you have to start from the bottom and work your way up?
Yeah.
It's like that. Adeline has to work his way up, and he's upset at that. He has to start at the bottom.
Yeah. So
like, they're a couple of Goombas. They're easy. Like, come on.
Then Navani comes out, and she's like, well, that was a really smart way to fight, not using any skill. Now people will think that you don't have skill. You were tricking them. And Adeline's like, I guess I was. And that's the end of chapter 14.
Pretty clever, Adeline.
Pretty sneaky, sis. Any questions?
Did Adeline get him diagonally?
Yes, with his foot to his shard plate. All right, chapter 15. A Hand with the Tower. And now this title is interesting. What kind of tower has hands? Answer, a clock tower. Got him. All right. Tvalkiv's Shoes. Knobweed. Pattern, go see what Tog is saying. On Roshar, you can make the Kessel Run in under 12 light years. Shallan fixes her dress and her feet, and she glows a little. Yeah, right, there's no bandits. Alright, chapter 15, back to Shallan, of course, and she's like, Tog wore 15 different pairs of shoes, and here I am wearing these stinky shoes. She finds some knobweed, which is the antiseptic. She's trying to keep her foot from being overtaken by rot spren. And then she has Pattern go and eavesdrop on what Tog is saying. I'm pronouncing it Tog because it's German.
Guten Tag.
Right, like that. Although this is a Schlechten Tag. All right, so on Roshar, they have light years, which is actually a unit of time. Because they have a cycle of years that goes through the 10 stances or whatever. And so one of them is light. So they have a light year. So if you've ever heard anybody use the term light year, you know, like, it's going to be light years from now before technology is advanced. And I don't know. So like, and on Roshar, light year actually is a measure of time. Think about it.
So they're referring to, if something takes multiple light years, they just mean multiple Rosharian years.
Well, yeah, but specifically the light years, so maybe, like, that would be a decade, where you could use, like, if we were like, oh, it's going to be 10 leap years, that would be 40 years.
It's like
years.
You're saying 4 score and 7 years ago, it's 4 Rosharian decades and 7 years.
Yeah.
We learned.
But a parsec still is a unit of distance, not time. And I thought that they wrote that whole scene in Solo to retcon that thing, but apparently it had been written in his Star Wars novels before Solo, so when I was actually looking up this line. Alright, I think that's the case anyway. Yep, and Shallan apparently fixes her dress or something. She uses her light weaving or whatever, and she also can heal herself like Kaladin. And then they're like, oh, there's some smoke behind us. It's bandits. They're chasing us. And I'm like, I'm a little suspicious. I feel like Tvalkov is just making up this story at this point in chapter 15. And that's the end of chapter 15.
That's a lot of chapters that we've covered so far. Surely you're done by now, right?
It takes place on Roshar, so there has to be a power of 10 chapters. So it's either got to be 100 or 1,000.
There was that episode of Monk where he hit his 100th case, but he accidentally did 101. So then they're like, well, guess you got to do 1,000 now.
That's funny. I think Monk would be satisfied with an even 200, though.
He might be. But for us, I think we need to read more.
That would be a really good, like, if they ever did not necessarily a revival, but maybe like a reunion episode or something where he had done 200 cases. And then, like, they can't get Monk out of retirement because he can't have 201 cases. Are you listening, AMC?
He could have 202.
USA.
for the
Are you listening, film. USA? MC? They'll all be owned by Disney by the time that reunion episode comes out.
They'll all be owned by Disney by next week, dude.
Wow. All right. They'll be owned by Disney before this episode airs.
They're already owned by Disney. Weren't you paying attention?
All right. Are we done with chapter 15?
Yes.
Okay. Chapter 16, Swordmaster. Time to guard the colon, boys, during sparring practice. What could possibly go wrong? Moash wants to eat shard blades. Moash notices Cal's murdering eyes. Gasp! Another high storm breaking? Is sh from Rira? Silfrenna doesn't like anyone who carries shards. Zahel, he's the swordmaster. Are you the plate keeper?
Is that a Ghostbusters reference?
Yeah.
Nice.
Thanks.
Yes, have some.
Have some Ghostbusters. Phasmophobia later? We'll talk later. All right, chapter 16, Swordmaster. This Zahel, he's the name of the swordmaster. He's going to, I guess, teaching Renarin how to use a shard blade or something, and he's gonna have some sparring practice with Adolin. And this chapter is from the perspective of Kaladin because he's bodyguarding them during the sparring practice, and Moash is with him, and he eyes the shard blades hungrily because he's hungry and wants to eat shard blades. As long as it doesn't touch any of his organs while he's eating it.
They're full of fiber.
And Moash. Okay, so Moash. So Cal. Oh, so they're talking about Amaram, right? And Moash is like, I see the way you look at Amaram, talking to Kaladin. I see the way you look. You got that murder in eyes. You want to murder Amaram, don't you? Moash, you know there's a murder in eyes. And then it turns out there was another break-in on Dalinar's palace during another high storm. And like, what did maybe Dalinar wrote it during his vision, or maybe something, I don't know. And so Kaladin starts talking to Zahel, and he's like, he sees him like from across the room, and he's like, this guy stands out, like he looks different. It's probably not an assassin, because an assassin would try to blend in, but I'm going to go check it out. And it's the Swordmaster. And that's the end of chapter 16.
Okay. Chapter next?
Chapter 17. A fractal doggo, or a pattern. I translated it. All right. Nas needs a new coat, because he had to go to the bottom of the ocean to get the picture entered, and he got his coat wet. So, Ars's actual name, but Ars owes him a new coat. What's the lady's name? Chris?
Her name is Chris.
Chris owes Nas a new coat. Chapter 17. Shallan behind to rebuild. Is there a verb in this? Well, to rebuild is an infinitive. It's weird.
Past Dave.
Shan stays behind to rebuild her skeleton. Bluth traded for a hat. Sounds like someone else I know.
Well, wait, would he trade or would he steal and call it
trade? He would trade for a hat. Perhaps Bluth has done the same. This is my new, I'm going to try to talk about Wayne in every episode from now on.
Better than Harry Potter.
All right. Shallan's second drawing of Bluth is basically a lie in picture form. Double smoke. Light weaving. Why do humans hide poop? Is it valuable? Then why leave it behind? Symbiosis for sapience. They're cooking a big lunch. All right, back to Shallan and crew. And she needs to. Maybe days was supposed to be different. I don't know. She's not staying. Anyway, she's rebuilding. She's making more sketches to fill out her sketchbook. She actually starts taking sketches and empty pages in Yasna's notebook as well. So I hope they weren't written in invisible ink and she draws pictures over them. That would be kind of bad and be hard to read the invisible ink. And the guy Bluth is like, got a hat. So she draws a picture of him and like, she doesn't really like it. He's not as interesting a subject as Yalb was. And Shallan draws a new picture of Bluth and she draws him a little more dapper, like a little more way that she would I would say ideally, but the ideal as far as Shallan is concerned, what she thinks would be good or an improvement for Bluth. And so I'm thinking like this is kind of like lying in picture form in a way. It's like this isn't an accurate depiction of Bluth. This is maybe like an exaggeration or something. And now
it's what would happen if you added two to his charisma.
And I kind of wish Pattern were in this scene and made a remark about this drawing, because he seems to be attracted to more than just like straight up verbal lies. He is kind of into jokes and humor. So maybe like an artistic reimagining would be like a different kind of quote lie that Pattern would take an interest in. So yeah, I'm kind of curious what Pattern would think of the slightly unrealistic drawing of Bluth. And then now there's double smoke. There's smoke from behind and from ahead, and blah blah blah. They talk about poop for a little bit, and they talk about sapience. So you know, Pattern is with Shallan and granting her these powers because without a human, Spren are unable to, you know, experience like intellect and free will and things like that. Like there is no sapience for Spren apart from being bonded to a human. And then the keep moving on to the fire, the smoke that's ahead. and they're not cooking lunch. It's just a place that's on fire. And I'm
everything not on fire.
No two people are not on fire. And that's the end of this week's chapters. Had some fun.
So,
made some yucks.
My question for you is, what do you think of the epigraphs?
Oh, the song.
You
didn't
talk
yeah.
about your thoughts.
Yeah, the different verses from the listener song of listing, where they talk about the different forms. So far, there's no new information in them. They're just what we know about the forms that we know about in verse. But there are more chapters, and we've already exhausted all of the forms except maybe slave form, I think. So we might get a new one next week.
Stay tuned.
Yeah.
Anyone else?
I just want to say
that poop conversation is one of my favorite scenes in the entire series. It's hilarious.
I liked it.
All right, Mike, shall we do the thing?
We should D-Dave ourselves unless someone has something else for him.
All right, thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye, Dave.
Hear from you next week, Dave.
Okay, Dave's gone. Play the thing.
This concludes the spoiler-free section of our podcast. If you are, as I am, reading along for the first time, we recommend that you stop listening now, as the following will contain spoilers for not only this book, but for other Cosmere books as well. There may also be general spoilers from any other source material. Spoilers begin now.
Yay.
Starting off, Tori, as great as this poop conversation is, there's a better poop conversation later in this same book.
Yeah, I didn't realize that they were both in the same book. Apparently this is the poop book.
You're talking about the Adolin and his shard plate one?
Yep.
Okay.
So that should be on, that quote should be on the cover for Stormlight 5.
Poop and shard plate.
Tori from the Cosmere Deep Dive podcast says, Words of Radiance is the poop book.
There you go. If you weren't sure if you should read this book, and that doesn't sell you, well, nothing will.
And Adolin starting his duels. It's so good.
I love know. The duels.
And this duel was great, and it's the worst duel. Like, they get progressively better, and
I mean, it is important to show how much better he is from these other people. So when do we get the big fight? Is that the end of part 3?
Part 3 or part 4, somewhere in there. Like, it's toward the end of the book.
Yeah, it's end of part 3, it looks like.
Right, because Kaladin has to spend some time in guarding his own jail cell.
Yep, that's the one. Oh man, I can't wait! Best scene, guys.
And Adolin, you know, puts himself in jail, but doesn't stop wearing cologne, you know? Why? Like,
of course. There are things I'm looking forward to Dave's reaction of. One is the most important scene in the book, the end of part 3. And I also am looking forward to when Sword Nimmy pops up.
I'm looking forward to him spotting who Zael is.
Yeah, I'm wondering.
Because
like, didn't see enough yet. We did not get enough of Zael yet.
Well, and there's a thing where, like, Zael doesn't talk like... wow, I blanked on his name.
Like an Alethi.
No, he doesn't talk like...
Arden. An Arden.
The name of the character.
Like Vasher?
Vasher. He doesn't talk like Vasher. Vasher never actually used, like, color analogies, color metaphors, and I have an explanation for that that I think I've said before, which is that since that's just sort of a base part of the language, it sort of got translated out in Warbreaker. But since he's using, you know, Google Auto-Translate to talk Alethi, that stuff shows up now.
Yeah. Because, like, the words don't translate. And he's like, what? How do you use this stupid autocorrect? I think, what is it, Oathbringer? Or maybe it's early Rhythm of War, where you actually really get to hear him talk more like Vasher.
That's early Rhythm of War, when he and Kaladin are having the laundry fight.
I feel like it does not stick out. Dave should hopefully notice that he's different and potentially a world hopper, but I don't think he's going to put together that's Vasher until... until Oathbringer, when Vivenna pops up, and then he'll be like, wait a minute, if Vivenna is here, where is Vasher? And
or, at
I
the
think
end
as soon
of,
as Nightblood shows up, yeah.
Yeah, at the end of at the end of Words of Radiance, when Nightblood shows up.
All right.
Like, oh, the guy who talked in color metaphors.
So wait,
I bet that was Vasher.
Should we put a bet on when Dave will figure out that's Vasher?
I will lay my fictional non-existent money down on before Nightblood shows up.
Yeah, I'm going to put it down on whatever chapter it is where he's training Kaladin for the first time.
I'm going to put my money down on Oathbringer. So anytime after that, I'll just cover anytime after you guys. Whoever's closest without going over.
This is not The Price is Right.
But it could be.
All right, what else do we have for this book and these chapters?
Let's talk about Shallan, because this is her book.
Nah.
So her thing about drawing Bluth as she sort of sees him, the idealized version. As we know, Shallan's ability is looking into the identity of people and things. Specifically, her powers let her look into all three realms. So she gets a bit of a peek, so to speak, in the cognitive and spiritual realm of a person as well. And she's able to look at someone's identity and potentially what it could be if certain choices were made. So just a slight little tweak, the idealized version of what she sees. Can be very subtle. And I think later on we're going to find out Bluth takes this picture and he actually does treasure it, and he does sort of act a little bit better sometime after this. Like, I think he dies defending her or something, if I recall somewhat correctly.
Yes, you are correct. He dies defending the caravan, not her specifically, I don't think.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool. That's all I have, actually.
Okay, shall we move on to Rhythm of War, Part 1, including the first round of interludes, so we have two new chapters to talk about.
Yeah, so for those of you listening, we're only talking Part 1 of Rhythm of War, not the whole thing.
Next week will be Part 2. The week after that will be Part 3, Part 4, Part 5. One part per week, and we are not going to go into anywhere near the same level of depth that we have been, because those were like a chapter at a time. Even this week, we're able to go into a lot more depth, because we only get two new chapters, being the two interludes that we weren't able to read before. And yeah, so Tori, what happens in those two interludes?
Ooh, well, I wasn't expecting to be asked, so let me pull up my copy of the book.
Well, the first interlude is Zha Anat.
Yes.
Actually, the first interlude is Silfrenna, but we went over that.
Which we already saw in... Yeah, we got that as a preview chapter.
Hold on, I have a question for you guys. Did you notice... I don't know if you reread it. I did. Did you guys notice anything different slightly? Because I feel like there was something different in the text here. Because we read through part one, maybe there was a tweak when he put this out as a preview chapter and he sort of took out Kaladin's choice of becoming a surgeon. Like, I don't know.
Yes, he specifically mentioned in one of the annotations that he had done that, and that there was just one thing that he missed that led a lot of people to figure out that that would be Kaladin's choice. But so there, I don't know specifically which lines, but he did say that happened.
Okay.
So Syl is best girl, and she goes flying through the tower and having fun times and seeing people and getting worshipped for the goddess that she is. And she has conversation with Dalinar about, hey, can you make it where I can see the darkness that Cal is experiencing so that I can better assist him with it? And Dalinar says something wise, which leads her to remember that, hey, she felt pretty down after her first knight died. And so maybe she just needs to remember how she felt back then. And she's like, thanks, Dalinar, you're super helpful. And she flies off again. That was the Syl chapter.
Great.
So tell me about the Zha Anat interlude, since that's entirely new.
So Zha Anat, look over this.
Tori's like, I don't remember reading this.
Right? I've read a whole book since then, you guys. So Zha Anat is a nice unmaid. She only changes the sentient spren with their permission. And she is working against Odium. She has... Moraes has asked her for a corrupted spren that he can bond, and she's agreed to send him one that might maybe want to bond him. She made no promises there, just said she would send one. But she doesn't want Odium to know about that. And Odium comes up like, hey, Zha Anat, what you doing? And she's like, oh, nothing. And she shoos some corrupted windspren out the door so that he might maybe chase those down instead of the corrupted radiant spren that she was sending on purpose. And
what kind of Spren was the first corrupted one that was the maybe, possibly, potentially could be thinking about maybe?
I don't remember that.
It says it's a glowing, shimmering light. I think that's the same one as Renarin's.
Okay, so yes, he'll be a fake sense. Will Shaper then.
Truth Watcher, you mean?
Fake Truth Watcher, right. Will Shaper is the one that...
And anyway, so she feels like Odium suspects that she's up to no good. And Odium's like, go watch this Teravangian guy. She's like, sure, I can do that.
Will Shaper is Venli. That's how words work. Venli.
Yeah. So I found some interesting things in this chapter. One of the things that stood out to me is talking about Odium when he was about to pop up. The text says he was coming, god of passion, god of hatred, god of all adopted Spren. What the heck does that mean? What is god of all adopted Spren? Suddenly,
that's a good question.
I feel like Tori knows.
I feel like Tori knows too.
She read Farhead.
Uh-huh.
I did not finish the book, just for the record. So my thoughts upon reading this, when I first read it, I'm like, oh no, what if all of the Spren are somehow touched or tainted by Odium? And maybe that's what brought along the Recreant way back when. I don't know if I'm going to still keep that, but that was my first thought when I first read this. So I'll just let you guys know.
I'm not done with part two yet, so I don't have anything.
But it looks like she really did actually help Shallan. Like, that wasn't a lie. She's playing some kind of game here where she's sort of playing both of the people in some way. So she's clearly not 100% on it. So that's good. I don't know if Marais should have a bonded corrupt friend, but I guess we'll wait and see.
I think Marais 100% should have a bonded corrupted Spren, because that should trap him in the Rosharan system and thus make him less useful to the Ghostbloods.
Would a corrupted Spren do that, though? That's the question. I guess it still would, because it's still tied to the book. Or book.
He tied doesn't to the need world. A Spren. He's already got a chicken.
And his chicken is very cool, but he also wants a Spren.
Well, he should take care of the chicken he has.
He does.
Oh, hey. So we know that Hoid now has a Spren. Does that mean that he's stuck on Roshar and can't go world hopping for a while?
Well, we know he has a Spren. We don't know if he actually finished bonding with the Spren, though. It was a cryptic. There's a chance that the cryptic went to someone else.
I don't know. He offered it truths.
Mm.
Like, there was every indication that a bond was starting at the end of Oathbringer.
Right. I think I need to know more about the nature of the Oath Pack and what keeps them tied to the current system. Maybe Hoid did do that because he has big plans, to, of course.
Or is it not that he's trapped, but that his Spren is trapped and he can't make use of that form of investiture elsewhere?
Right. It's not that Hoid's trapped, it's that they're trapped with Hoid. Hmm. And then, of course, the chapter ends with Teravangian is a weapon.
Well, speaking of that weapon, he gets the next chapter.
Oh yeah? Tell us more.
So Teravangian is not having a particularly smart day, and everybody is sad because he is leaving to die. No, he's leaving to betray Dalinar and the Coalition and will most certainly be executed afterward. And so everyone is saying goodbye before he leaves. And they're like, are you sure you have to go? And he's like, yes, for the plan, this is how it has to go. To fulfill my plan that I worked on when I was a genius that one time, even though I'm not currently a genius. And he's trying to be, you know, stiff upper lip about it, but he's feeling kind of sad himself. And he says bye to his friends, tells them what to do after he's gone, and he's asking himself if it was worth it.
He actually says the diagram is fulfilled, and I think he's disbanding it.
Yes.
For the record, guys, I totally called this when we were doing the preview chapters. I said maybe Teravangian was working with ODM, and that's why the thing. I totally called this.
You did. Good job.
Okay.
So yeah, Teravangian convinced that he will die, and basically has his own funeral here.
He got it in writing that Carbranth would survive. Goal was.
And apparently his heir in Carbranth is completely unconnected to anything involving the diagram. With no specific mention of his heir in Yaakoved, who I'm guessing is extremely deeply connected to the diagram.
Or it just doesn't matter, because their life is forfeit anyway.
Yeah, we're apparently throwing the entire country of Yaakoved, who already went through this, like, brutal civil war, under the heel of Odium.
Well, he's specifically throwing the whole entire world but Carbranth under the bus.
Right, but more directly, the entire country of Yakaved.
Yes, they were just a tool. It was just a tool so he can be at the table with Dalinar. Like, that was the whole reason he did what he planned.
So, do we have anything else, part one-ish, that we haven't covered? I don't feel like we do. I have lots of stuff in part two, and I'm only, like, maybe half or two-thirds of the way through it that I want to talk about, but we're not doing that yet.
I'm in part four currently in my read-through. I have a lot I would love to discuss, but it will have to wait.
Read faster.
I read when I can.
I'm going to get part two done before we record next. Yeah. But yeah, I have all sorts of exciting things that I've learned in part two that I can't talk about yet. Why did we choose this? Why did I choose this?
That's true.
I chose this.
I am sort of glad that we weren't going to do the whole book, because then otherwise I would be like, I can't, guys, because I'm not done, and, well, neither are you.
Yeah, I mean, there was no way I was going to finish reading the thing in less than a week. Like, no, I'm not putting myself through that.
To be fair, I didn't plan to do it that way. I just literally couldn't stop.
Right, and, like, if that happens, awesome. But if your goal is to just power through it as quickly as possible because you have a deadline, then that, A, sucks some of the fun out, and then, yeah, B, like, you're not letting the book go at the pace that is comfortable for you, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I've been grabbed. I've been reading more than I expected I'd be able to, because I don't want to stop. Like, I don't want to put the book down.
Well, I mean, what else are you going to do when the baby's awake and you have to be awake with the baby?
There's no way I'm doing both. I don't have the hands. Big hardcover is hard.
Audiobook, man.
Please. There's multiple issues with me and audiobooks.
Ebook?
I bought the hardcover, but I'll probably, during the reread, when we get up to it, we'll also purchase the e-version.
I got the audio and the e-version, and I would just go back and forth between the two, depending on if I had to clean the house or drive to work or what have you.
Real chat, guys. I feel like when you buy a hardcover of a book, it should just come with the e-version as well. There's no reason.
Oh, I agree. Yeah.
Audiobook, I can understand. You got to pay the people who actually do the recording and stuff. So I can understand there's a separate cost to that. But ebooks and hardcover, like, you're buying the hardcover, which is more of the cost of printing versus a bunch of bytes. You should get both. And they can make the ebook version cheaper because it doesn't have the printing cost. So if you want the ebook only version, then that's fine. But if you get the hardcover, you should get the ebook version too. Look, this is 2020, guys. Fix this.
Okay. Yes, I agree.
I'm off my soapbox.
No, it's a good hill to die on, I think.
Oh, man. It's funny, when I bought my e-reader the first time, I was sort of skeptical I would use it a lot. I'm just sort of like, I'll give it a try. Because specifically, I can read, like, in bed, like, at night, so my wife could actually sleep. Because you can't really do that with a physical copy. Like, the lights are just too bright. So right. I'm like, you know what? We're going to e-reader. I was borrowing hers to try it out. And then I'm like, okay, I'll finally buy my own. And now I only want to use it. I thought I'd be like, I love books, like, physically, the feel. It's a nice feel to it to actually physically read a book. But ebooks are so convenient. E-readers. It's just so easy.
I hear good things about the Paperwhite.
I have the Paperwhite.
Yeah. I hear it's like the best e-reader.
Yes. My wife bought a Kobo? No, I don't know, something like that.
Your wife bought a Qdoba franchise, got it?
I forget the name of it.
Whatever it's called, Craig can't pronounce it anyway.
It's next door to a Chipotle, so it's not doing great.
God. Let me see if I can actually look at the name, because I don't know. Point is, it's just called a Kobo. Okay, it's a Kobo. So I tried it, but I got the Amazon Kindle Paperwhite. It is just so responsive, so clear. There's a couple of options and tweaks that you can do, which is nice as well. It's just so good, guys. So good.
See, I don't have a dedicated e-reader. I just have all the e-reader apps on my phone. I've got the Kindle app and Overdrive and Freeding and just all the things. And I know some people don't like to read on their phone, but I don't really have a problem with it.
Yeah.
I downloaded an e-reader app specifically so that I could read Dawn Shard on my phone, so I wouldn't have to do it on my computer, where I have a million other things that distract me and prevent me from doing the things I'm supposed to do.
We don't know what that's like.
So it kind of sounds like we're pretty well winding down.
Well, I did have one question for us, just regarding part one of the book.
Okay.
Does it live up to your expectations so far?
I mean, yeah, in that... Okay, so first off, we have Navani's Fabrial Science epigraphs, which so much speculation can be done with those, and it throws out old information that we may have had before of, like, what metal is on what Fabrial. Because, no. Sometimes they just plate them in different metals to fool people because of industrial espionage. And so, like, that part is awesome. And then there's the, like, beginning of the book giant reveal thing. In this case, the sibling. In Words of Radiance, it's the nature of Spren. I don't remember what it was in Oathbringer, but I bet there was one. And, yeah. Yeah, it's
great. I have to say, looking at part one specifically, I was a little put off. I'm not a fan of how it opened up, and it felt like there was a year that passed, and it seemed like it was sort of like a conclusion type thing. We were in a mini Sanderson avalanche, but it didn't have the same feel to it compared to like at the end of the book where you're heavily invested, capital I invested, of course, and it just felt weird to me. But then as part one went along and I got into it again, I'm like, all right, yeah, these are our characters. We know it. Not that much has changed. I think Dawn Shard has actually helped a little bit cover over that gap, which unfortunately we got after reading the preview chapters, but people maybe potentially read that before they got to Rhythm of War. So yeah, so it was a little different. I will have to say it has a different feel compared to the previous books. But that, again, specifically my part one thoughts.
It kind of amazes me that, like, the order they were written in, that Brandon was able to pull that off. Like,
Dude's got plans, man. He's got those outlines,
I know, like,
ready.
Clearly he had all of this outlined so he could just, like, power through it when the time came. But that's also making me think that if he wanted to, he could just start writing book 6 of Stormlight without having written book 5, and then write book 5 later, and it would still fit.
Yep, that's what he can do. Isn't he, there's like some kind of preview, like I think he's going to plan to have a book, a short story between books 1 and 2 as well.
Oh, I thought that was Warbreaker.
Well, sure, but a Rosharian novella for between parts 1 and 2.
I mean, when I do rereads, I consider Warbreaker to be Stormlight 1.5, so.
That is you. I'm okay, still excited for what's to come, though, guys. I want the end of Era 2 Mistborn, please. I want it so bad.
Yeah, we're going to need to end the episode because I'm going to want to start to talk about part 2 stuff.
Okay. Well,
and
then
we have to end it before I talk about the end of the book.
Indeed. So, all right. Bye, everybody.
Good night, bye. Internet.
This has been the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at CosmereCast. Or like us on Facebook. Our theme music is Traveling Made Up Continents by Gillicuddy, used with permission. Hear more from him at the Free Music Archive. Thanks for listening.